Welcome back to the show, everyone. And today we've got returning Barry Littleton. Barry, how you going, mate?
Pretty good. How you doing, Pete?
Good. It's really good to connect to you again. It's been a few months, I think, since we've had you on the show, and we haven't talked for quite a few months. We do keep in touch on Facebook. How's things been?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Staying aware and noticing some different things, especially since coming forward and talking as far as awakening goes. I'm seeing some things, you know. I'd say it's positive for the most part, definitely positive. And I didn't imagine it would actually be like this. You know what I mean? Really, when we talk about the shift that's going on and the awakening, really, what does that mean? You know,
well, how well, is that? That's a very good point. And that's what I want to go into to start off with. Now, just so everyone knows, we've had lots of activity happening here in Melbourne, lots of footage, lots of daytime stuff, and we even had a CE5 event lately that started in the daylight, and we had stuff going on there. Now, this is what it's about, is connecting on some level and setting that intention. But what Barry and I was talking about before the show, and I want to go into, is it's not just about the lights in the sky. And I, more than anyone, love filming them, love showing the crafts to people and getting them to connect and have their own communication going on. But that's what it's about. It's the communication part, isn't it, Barry? Because you've seen a lot of stuff yourself. You've had a lot of experiences, but like we're saying, like the crafts and all that are amazing. It's fantastic. But and with the guided sessions that I do, it's about getting people to connect and go into that. And that's what we're talking about. So do you want to go into the communication side of things? Because this is where things light. People want to go elsewhere to get, I guess, the information, the communication. And this is where people will come to myself for the guide sessions. And I think sometimes they don't realize what it is. A guide session getting you to connect to the beings. Not me. I can do it. And I do help them and see the information. But I want to get them to do the work. So I'm not their middleman. So you're not their middleman. We can all network and share the information and see what correlates and who's saying what. But it's really about connecting ourselves to what we're already connected to on another level, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are two aspects of that. And one of them would be that how subtle contact can be right now. We've discussed that before, you know, how one person can see the ships or two people can out of a crowd of 10 that can't, you know, and it's just the fact that you were able to see it and the amount of mass sightings that we're having right now is definitely the first phase of contact. And the second is what you were talking about. And a lot of people right now, after coming out and talking with you and others, the amount of people that have, I only communicate through Facebook, and I fall behind all the time, I apologize. But the amount of people that are awake right now and are having like conscious experiences, telepathic, or having dream visions, that is the other step. Who's on board these craft and how are they actually communicating? You know, and you don't, like I've said before, you wouldn't think that in Star Trek wise, a whole federation of beings would stop what they're doing to just communicate independently to you. And that's exactly what's happening. You know, so anytime that they're showing themselves like that, we need to be aware of that more subtle, able of that part of communication. Something I pretty try to vividly say is that for a long time, man, I used to tell you, I thought I was Mr. Conscious Experiencer, because a lot of what happened to me from childhood, I was very aware of and happened in a conscious state, you know. And then as I had what I call adult onset experiences, where I was missing time several times with somebody else, and then finally by myself, equaling just over 20 hours. And man, I tried everything, man. I tried advanced Kriya Pranayama. I tried, I tried Ekankar. I even got studied hypnosis and got a certification in that, trying to self-hypnotize myself to remember what happened during this missing time, instead of just these flashes I could see. You know what I mean? And despite all of that, I couldn't get the memories back. And that was rather frustrating. So, you know, until after I had my TBIs, I decided to get a professional regression. And that's actually how you and I wind up meeting. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because you had posted yours. But the fact is that the subconscious and the superconsciousness records everything. Mm-hmm. And once you can get kind of into that alpha state of consciousness and beta state, go deeper, your consciousness will tell everything. So people think so often the hypnotist, if they don't have a rapport with them, they're going to do something to them. Something's being done. It's you. It's your own subconsciousness that you're accessing it. You just have to get your conscious mind slightly out of the way to access it. But we're recording that information all the time. Quadrillion. Millions.
Would you say it's sort of like reconnecting with the multidimensional mind?
Mm-hmm.
In that state, because in that state, yes, we've got like, you've got access to all that is, and not just that, you've got access to communicate with other beings on that wavelength as well.
All right, man, I see how spirit has taken us already.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo, boy, I knew it was going to be a trip. Okay, Pete, we spent all this time, we've been talking a lot, and I myself have spent a lot of time talking about us being immortal soul beings, and the immortal soul being traps. We've talked a lot about soul traps, okay? And some of those are hideous. The fact that they're tagging and implants on our soul dimensionally before we incarnate, and then all the way up through that, what they're doing to keep us asleep. I focused on that a lot, but I wasn't talking about the positive aspect of it. The whole gamut. Immortal soul beings, you and I, and everyone listen right now, as immortal soul beings, what the fuck does that really mean? Excuse my language, man, but I mean, you know what I mean? Seriously, what does that mean? what does that mean from a soul level about what we really are? Okay, that means, and when it's said, in so many religious contexts, I think the Christian Bible says that we're created in God's image. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not some cat on a throne, all right? I think that it's the fact that we are creators. We are creators with the intent of will. We can create things just the way our creator does. And it's so much easier for us to think that, hey, it's another God that's created everything, which there is a supreme, but a supreme source. But it's easier to think that as opposed to we are creators also. And if you want to think about it, all right, immortal soul being, this is the definition that came to me, all right? Beings that live in false illusions and guises. And if you want to think about something, we are the beginning and the end, like the creator. What is there left to do? What is there left to learn? You've been everything. You've done everything. Okay, and it's like playing a game that you know the end of already. And if you think about it, we've all played hide and go seek. Mm-hmm. And after the first game or two of that, you always knew where everybody was hiding, but you still did it anyway. You still went through the game anyway. Now, for us, the only thing we can do is, as immortal soul beings, we're facing two real problems. One is stagnation, and the other is freaking boredom, man. Boredom. So, you know, and we have something else. As immortal souls, if we're in the presence of another immortal soul, our creation, our universes come to an agreement. And we start perceiving the same thing. And that's what we're doing, what we can't remember we're doing right now. And the other part, only thing we have left in this game is to forget everything and trick ourselves so we can remember.
Yeah.
What else is left? But at the same token, we've got so many immortal souls right now vibrating to keep this illusion together. Any illusion takes constant energy to reinforce it. And that's why so many of us are busy paying our bills, take care of our kids, not getting fired, having financial stress. There's very little time for trying to attain pure source consciousness, that other side of our energy, to free it up so we can perceive that. You know what I'm saying? It's just yeah, one of those things. I'm trying to think of that in terms of what an immortal soul actually is. And for us, I think it's that heavy, that we are creators and each one of us is in a different universe right now.
Well, that's the similar stuff I've experienced. And even when Shiji's related that similar stuff to me, that we are creator beings. And you get to a certain point where you then, because you're a creator being, create your own universes. And it's not just one facet, there's multiple facets of you. And then you're co-participating, which is really all this is a projection of our own illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that, what I'm trying to understand is when I've been shown the universe is like, she equated it to our, you know how our cells regenerate every 7 years? She was saying that's what the universe or universes do, but on a much larger scale, like on a completely different scale, but that everything rejuvenates and you know, regrows or reforms, but it's the same thing. It's just like another cycle type thing. And then, like, I've seen the other universes outside of this universe, which are, you know, again, each one of them have got their own vibrations, their own densities, their own realms contained within it. And then when you put all these other universes together, they said it like it was super God consciousness in a way to relate it to me. So I had something to, you know, human way to put a label on, to try and understand, so I could try and not understand it just myself, but relay it. So this is where what you're saying is going into deep realms and the stuff that I like to go into, because this is where it lies. It's real deep. This goes into also how the dark and the light are also a projection of each other's illusions, and that we need each other, whether it's for soul growth or whatever, to stress us to, I guess, put roadblocks on us. So what we do on conscious level is expand outside the box. Therefore, we get to a higher level of consciousness rather than staying in our comfort zone. So this takes us down the conscious route, which is what this is all about, but it goes very deep, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when I did my fourth regression, and I was very much, I had specific instructions for the hypnotist to follow and things that I wanted to obtain, you know? Excuse me. But she, so she knew exactly in that way where to guide me, what to go, what I was trying to obtain. But for my fourth regression, there was no one else with me when I had this missing time. So that time I didn't have that comfort of knowing I wasn't insane or something, you know? But what winds up coming out of it is I'm telling her, I want you to take me very deep down to, like, I want you to take me down to Delta, down to Theta, you know what I mean? And she did do that, but I couldn't remember the regression itself when it was over, let alone the what happened during the missing time. It's on the tape and everything. But, you know, what winds up happening is I began describing creation. And during this regression, what I wanted was to get the names of the beings I had encountered, and I wanted to get more specific technicals on the technology I saw. That's really what I was looking for. And what's happened, inadvertently, I'm talking about the creation and about our creator starting off as a singularity, and through the first act being through loneliness, the first was a birth of souls. And what I saw them coming out was as waves. And that's interesting, because I kind of can corroborate that with Mary Rodwell, or is it Dolores Cannon, that talks about the waves of souls.
And that's what I've seen that too, yeah.
And they describe it as souls coming here and star souls coming here to this planet. But I'm seeing something different coming out of our creator.
Bigger, creating all the other stuff within itself.
Yeah, each wave. And in the first wave, the beings, each one of these beings are creators. Okay, each one has a different configuration pattern of life. Seen it. Okay, and then you've got one, I think especially, that says, you know, well, I can create more than just my own universe. I create a couple. And
they create the planets and everything.
And our creator has given so much of its creative force to us that I'm him now. I'm it now. I can create more than y'all.
Just what you said quickly, you talked about light and the light structure. Was it what I would say the geometric type light?
Which light?
Well, talked about a light just then, how like one of the beings that came out of this, you know, types of beings were light and geometric, or light, the structure of lights. Like,
oh, souls.
So yeah.
Yeah. Patterns of light that's light that seemed to be held together by ectoplasm.
Yeah.
That's what it appeared to be to me. And I mean, it doesn't go exactly what we've been taught, but it's what I saw, you know? And it's a matter of how many waves came out of the creator. I see the wave I'm on, but there are other waves that go back. Do those waves go all the way back to materiality, to material physicality? I mean, I don't know. You know what I mean? All I know is I can see the first ones. And when you think about the souls I'm seeing, okay, that's enough to where, good Lord, no wonder there's bubble theory. When you talk about quantum theory and how many actual universes there are, if you're dealing with that many souls that can create, even on this planet alone, if that's what we are, immortal souls that can't remember that, You've got what, about a billion of us here that can do it? That's going into the realm of consciousness. It's maybe not the separate classifications that we think it is. Just like some of the ships you and I have been on. Mm-hmm. There are no bolts, there are no rivets on there. There are no windows on the ones I've been inside, unless you're in a special room. You know what I mean? They're an organism.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Living symbiotically
part of the crew. I couldn't understand why one of these ships, you know, I'm there physically when I'm not about to puke. Some of the technology is solid. The rooms move around you, but the crew members are half out of phase. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, what the heck, you know? And I say, some people say, well, that thing that on TV there, that video was CGI. That's becoming a convenient excuse by the media now and by the cabal to stop anything real. If you've ever met an interdimensional being for real with your physical eyes, you'll see they're out of phase.
Well, that's what I was talking about with you before this, in terms of, you mentioned the Wangina and how I've seen them. So if the way I can equate this to people watching or listening is, the static that you see is energy. Everything's made up of energy. And I've got it that bad that I used to wear glasses, and people that know, when we're skywatching, I've got to wear glasses. But if I haven't got them on and I know where the crafts are, then I go and get the glasses, they're there. But it's because of that conscious connection. But if you look in the static and you almost do it like a, you know, the third eye things, or the eye images where you sort of go cross-eyed and you see the image, 3D image pop out of the, you know, picture or whatever it is. If you can do that in energy, when you see all that static in the room, that's how I see a lot of the stuff, unless it's wispy where it's starting to materialize more, or again, physical, where it's full-blown physical like me here. But I've seen the Wangina and these lizard type, not reptilian, but I was saying they were more like stick figure lizards. And you see them pop out of this. This is where this stuff, like you're saying, is everywhere. And people just aren't picking up on it. They're expecting something. And again, yes, I've had physical experiences. I've had stuff where they're as physical as this frigging cup in my hand and they've touched me. But a lot of this isn't like that. Like we've talked about before, it's not nuts and bolts either. So this is where it's, you know, you hear about apparitions and these types of things. This is where how they appear a lot of the time, and the crafts, they can land on the rooms and that, which, you know, people want the nuts and bolts and this and that, and I can get it, but only a small majority is any physicality to it on this vibration. That's what you're experiencing too, isn't it? It's so much further out than what people can think, and this is where you're going multidimensional, not one-dimensional in terms of the 3D way.
Yes. You know, I couldn't understand that. First time I'd, you know, seen a ship really up close that was, well, not as a kid, but as an adult, you know, where I'm missing time and I'm staying there watching this thing. I start watching it transmute from what appeared to be almost a Pleiadian type of ship. Becca Starr drew some of that for me. And it transformed into what appeared to be quasi-crystals, okay? And there was no way to describe that to anyone. And I mean, and trying to look for that in ufology, it wasn't there either. So not could I not tell anyone about it. I couldn't find any information about it. And when I went to that, all I'm finding is things about people getting abducted, these beautiful, perfect Caucasian beings from Pleiadians that, you know, Fabio. Christy Brinkley, I mean, all of them look like that. I mean, even all the hybrids look like that now. It's like, good Lord, is nobody seeing no brothers anywhere? Seeing no black people, man? I have.
And they're out there. This is, it's not one, you know, one-sided, is it?
Yeah, oh, not at all, you know. But by the same token, you know, when dealing with that and dealing with my own personal issues, whatever they might be, would be that when I saw my first charter, you and I have talked about, that for me came around every 7 years. The first one, he was a Caucasian man, you know, appeared to be about 50. And I mean, very helped me, did nothing but help me. But when I go back and look on the fact that I've seen not just perhaps inner earth beings, star beings, whatever they might be, that are not just Caucasian, but I've seen ones that appear to be ethnic also. So that, you know, and then there's many that don't even have bodies. So that takes it to a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it does, because, you know, I've had experiences with beings that just aren't white. And then again, that aren't, you know, just human looking. They may have, you know, two arms and two legs and that, but and then we go into the light realms and the geometric light realms, but not, you know, even in the Pleiades, and I can tell you, no, Ryan, there's Asian looking beings there as well as black ones, as well as in the Pleiades. You've almost got a whole friggin' gamut there of almost everything, because everything's in the future there, and it's basically everything that's happened on the other realms here and out of time and space, all made up there later on. Sirion, you've got blacks as well as blue beings, and you've got like blue humanoid type ones as well as the Elohim that hang out there as well. But it's something that's not being addressed. Everyone's just, you know, is reporting, and maybe that's the case that a lot of people are more interacting with what seems to be the white beings from some of these realms, but nobody's talking about what else is going on. And it's, and look, it takes a lot to come forth and talk about what you're talking about, because nobody's addressing this, just like how years ago nobody was really addressing, or once in a blue moon, the crystals or the quasi quartz, you know, and all that. Or even in the last few years, like myself, I didn't want to talk about how sometimes when I'm filming the craft, I'm on the craft looking down at myself, or that the crafts are made out of consciousness, like not even organic. It's living light created from our own living light as a group collective all by ourselves. So you've broke the barriers on a lot of areas too, along with others talking about going down these paths. But you've interacted with different types of beings. So this is, you know, something I want people to take on board.
You know, spirit takes us, I guess, where it does be. I've got these sketches that I had done for the book that I've been having trouble finishing writing. Anyway, but there's a certain being that I showed a picture of in that interview with Kelly I did a few weeks ago. And the amount of responses I got on this being in particular was interesting. This being is, and it's from the multiverse, all right? That is Mana. You can see, it's kind of dark in this room. But Mana was tall and had one of the beings that had the look of the brain on the outside.
Yep.
Okay. Now, that being is amphibious and from the multiverse. All right. Now, in terms of that, I'd say that the reverse brain thing kind of seemed more like a cross between an aardvark or armadillo armor.
Yeah, yeah.
And fish patterned skin. So I understand now, but he, you know, it's giving me telepathic information. Look into this being, Dr. Akbar from Star Wars, which is one of the beings on the rebellion ship with the eyes. Looks kind of like a toad.
Yeah.
If you can understand more about that being, you'll understand more about my species. And I never even thought of, okay, and a planet, an amphibious planet in the multiverse, outside of the bubble that
it's
we...
It's not just like here.
That.
Mm. No, and this is why it's great. We've talked about, it's the latest Star Trek series that they've made as well the last few years. You and I spoke about that, and I've never been much in the sci-fi or anything. Yeah, I saw Star Wars and that sort of stuff when I was younger. Never Star Trek till the last year or two it would be now. And anyway, I bought a couple of seasons of that newer one. I think it's called Starship Enterprise, before Contact, when they go into the Federation. And yes. I tell you what, whoever's making that is either watching all the stuff we're talking about, like everyone in the field's talking about, or they've got something. Because even when they talk about that grid of, like there's a grid of these balls out there in the universe, and that's equivalent to almost to the soul trap type thing that we hear about, which is, you know, again, it affects you if you allow it to affect you, but also with the councils and the types of beings in the Federation, all these, the different races even in it, that's probably the most spot-on series in terms of coming close. The reptilians are even in it. And then there's different factions of the reptilians, and there's a race, I forget what the reptilian race is a part of, but to me that would be the Archons. Mm-hmm. And you've got the different factions. So you've got reptilians, and then you've got these human-looking things that are a part of the rep, or like under this head race. And there's different factions and different races. There's something going on there, man. And this is where sometimes these shows may be references for us to help people fathom what we are experiencing. Not like that, but maybe some of the information or some of the physicality and the descriptions.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if it hadn't been for two shows in particular, which would be Star Trek and actually Doctor Who, when you really get into it, I wouldn't have had no frame of reference And I started liking it as a kid because I was like, I've seen stuff like that.
Yeah.
There was a couple of shows that would stick out to me like that. You know what I mean? That
the creator's going to be affected on some level.
You just spoke about Star Trek Enterprise. Mm-hmm. There's one in particular on there I advise you to watch. I think it's called Time Shift. But what they introduced there, like they did in Voyager, which is something they call a temporal accord. Okay, and what that is that a temporal, a part of the Federation that's hundreds of years in the future, all they do is try to correct temporal incursions. And the guy will be on the ship and hanging out with the captain all the time, like kind of like a yeoman or something. And then he'll take him in the cabin and he'll have a certain type of iPad that he'll show everything, the different timelines. And he'll say, I come from right there. And he'll start saying how time is curved. I mean, there's so many things there most people don't pay attention to, really, in Doctor Who. The TARDIS, and they're saying it more nowadays, the TARDIS is alive. It's organic. It grows. It grows until it dies. In fact, it dies because it grows too much. That's things there. He has a symbiotically connection with it. Symbiotic isomorphic controls. See, people aren't really paying attention to a lot of that information. And I've seen ships that are being built over wormholes. They're being grown over micro wormholes, I think, to be honest. You know, and that's why some of the engines are that living light. That's what they're harnessing there. It's, you know, I couldn't understand at first. I had to learn more in this dimension.
But there's so much, you know, similar stuff in terms of even the public domain. So yes, we've got iPads and all these fantastic devices and technology. But if mm-hmm. we even look at this stuff, for example, I saw a documentary with David Adair, who apparently he's got all these great, you know, credentials, and he helped create, I think, the Navy nuclear motor for one of the submarines, and he won, you know, these awards from the U.S. You know, Air Force, I think. Creating things at a young age, he was building full-blown friggin' rockets at 12. I met Stephen Hawking when he was young. The documentary is well worth watching. I think it's on the UFO TV channel. I own it here, but he talks about how in later in it, I think it is, how one of the universities, and I think this is in the mid 2000 area, they were working on technologies to put blockers on the firing mechanisms on some of the. It might have been a jet. I think it was, because even if you thought, with the apparently the technology from my understanding, if you thought the fire mechanisms from the helmet or whatever would fire the friggin' missile or whatever, or the gun. So there's technology that they're working on to block that, because obviously there was some mistakes. I think he says something like, you know, if a pilot comes home, finds his missus sleeping with somebody else, he's got to go back to work, he's not in a good mood. And you put him in charge of one of these devices, the thing could probably, he doesn't say this bit, but, you know, obviously the thing could probably go haywire and shoot the crap out of a lot of things. So they've had to create a device to put a blocker on these as well. I'm not sure how it would work then, whether you'd do it manually, but this is going down the route of that is a form of symbiotic technology, because it's whatever the craft is doing is connected to him. Now, whether the craft is alive or AI, probably AI, some type of AI.
Say that, I knew it.
You know what I mean? There's that connection.
I'm AI. I knew it. It's taking us the whole time to artificial intelligence. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I just wanted to point that out, because this is even something in the public domain. That's why I'm bringing it up. It's not like you and me are just pulling this out of our asses. That's something that people can actually go and see, or you know, maybe research themselves.
You know, there's a couple of things to talk about here. Let's bring this up, because it's something I've been focusing on a lot right now. And that is self-activating machines. So, and when I look at computer systems, the best ones on Earth here we seem to have, they all have a software and a hardware component, right? Most of them? Currently, even the quantum computers, right? Now, man, if we're thinking about terms of things that are terraforming, how can I say this? Jesus, it's going to be sounding
just,
weird.
Just tell it like it is, brother. Just tell it.
Terraform for years, all right? And I'm seeing some things. Right now, no one likes to talk about crop circles anymore that keep cropping up, all right? We've got things like that Roswell debris, or that engine debris, okay, that has sacred symbols on it. If it's in a certain energy field, it starts creating anti-gravity, all right? So that's telling you, that's self-activating machine. A lot of these drones that we're seeing for like one day in like 2007, I think it was, one of them's called the Chad drone, and the other one's called the California Bay drone or something. But they all, when they start enhancing the tails of those, they've got sacred symbols on them. It looks like crop circles, mm-hmm. all right? Self-activating patterns. And, you know, you got a guy that came forward, said that he worked for, what was it, Alto in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And that was a place, they called it Carrot. And it was reversing engineering technology. And he said he dealt with the symbols, like the ones that were on the Chad drone. And all these just came into focus for just a second, and then they phase back out, which tells us something, right? If you got people that were working on these, how many of these craft are in our atmosphere and always have been for 1,000 years?
Yeah.
And what is it the government is doing that's learning to decloak that? Because what they back engineered are three things, self-activating software. One is going to be invisibility, that metamaterial that we know that does that, all right? The second is holographic projectors. We know that. We know the virtual reality scenario technology that is used to trick so many abductees. They think they're talking to mom and dad or their ex-girlfriend or somebody, when really, no. So that's number two, all right? The third component is anti-gravity. Those are the three components that I think they've been back engineering the whole time.
What but do you think the symbols mean? Like, what do you think the function of the symbols is?
You know, as far as I can tell, it's like a mapping, a language that's mapping for the self-activating software, that's something similar to like an obsidian would be, a type of glass like that, I think. You know, trying to think. Okay, let's take this a step further, all right? Stonehenge. I found out something about Stonehenge, and I think Lobuki Tempe, I was having a problem saying that word. There, the way that the stones are slated and the laterally, they produce a megahertz of 10 megahertz constantly.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that's the same frequency as the alpha states of the brain, of the human brain. And if you want to talk about software and hardware, I think maybe some of these ancient sites we have are the hardware, and the crop circles are the software. Self-activating. I've heard that they were for time travelers. Some of these are marking entry points and exit points for time travelers. That's us 40, 50,000 years in the future, when our DNA is burned out and they have to come back here for some reason.
All right.
I've heard that too. And some of these orbs seeing in the crop circles are actually the time travelers, which is us. Just food for thought. I'm not telling anybody any of this is correct, but yeah. These are things that need to be acknowledged. Self-activating machines in our atmosphere. I myself have been on ships where there are symbols, and I didn't understand it. Like, for example, this one right here is an Andromeda Council member, okay? And if you can see him, he's got a blue device in his hand, or a crystal device in his hand. She did that pretty well. Christine Dennett did these for me. But it looks like fiber optics coming out of it, and each one of them had one of these in his hand. And man, these guys are little. They're like 2 feet tall, man. Okay. Anyway, but these crystals have the fiber optics coming out of them, but also have symbols on them. Weird symbols I didn't recognize. So that's some type of self-activating technology there as well.
I'll tell you something. Just what I remember. The same. I'd mentioned David Adair not too long ago. He mentioned on a radio show, I think somewhere in the late 2000s area. I can't remember where. Dr. Greer got him to go into, I think, a Congress meeting type thing. And he said he actually went there and this and that. And Greer wanted to sort of save him for later on when there was another hearing or something. I'm not sure what it was, but it was looking into the UFO subject. Anyway, somebody brought up the symbols, and I don't know if it was a Roswell craft, like you were mentioning on the I-beam, how there's the symbols on it. He said when he was in one of these, in the engine, which was the size of a friggin' Greyhound bus, which would look like two octopuses having sex, and it shimmered on the outside when he was walking over it, and then later on it was like tornadoes when he was pissed off. I think Oppenheimer might have been there. It was somewhere else, or someone else that was part of the Nazi agenda when they came here with Paperclip. But anyway, the moral to what I'm saying is the point, not the not the moral, but the point of the story is that he said he's got a photographic memory apparently, and the friggin' symbols he said he could draw them out and remember them, like every single symbol. And he said that the ones that he knew of anyway, what he realized they were, was they were basically serial numbers for the parts, because he said they'll reverse on the opposite side or on the same part that was on the other end of where the engine area was. That, like, so it was the same symbols, but they were done like in a mirror image or backwards maybe. So not saying that that's definitely not saying that's what all symbols are, but I just don't know if that would have made, I'm just getting told to say this to you. That's why I'm saying it.
Well, you know, a lot of times, like even like the Carrot documents themselves, you can see some of the Carrot documents, the what he provided as self-activating software patterns, some of these designs on like the Chad drone. You can see a couple of them are on there.
Yep.
And they're so, and I try to look at them and how they were traced, they're so intricate. It's like, my Lord. But if you're thinking about, you know, dealing with type of technology that doesn't have bolts and nuts like stuff here, mm-hmm. but is done in gravity, anti-gravity, and done with that type of technology, you know, it's a whole different symbiotic type of language. And I'm starting to wonder something myself. How many people that are doing all the star language, the ones that are legitimately doing it, like Soul, mm-hmm. how many of these symbols they're making will match up with somebody else's that are going to be activating? Because a lot of these symbols, like the one from the Carrot, they say when you start designing them, you start drawing them, even on the paper themselves, the anti-gravity function starts to work. That means just even on drawings itself. I heard a few people saying that, and I was like, oh, that's bullshit. But, you know, now I don't think so much. You know what I mean? And maybe that's part of, and that's just the next step of technology for us. And then you have to incorporate the organic component. You know, something that not many talk about a lot is the organic component of these ships. Like somebody said, like the inside of one of the ships he was on, what was it like? I said, to me, it was like the inside of a mushroom. We have things
I've heard that so many, and I've seen similar stuff too. It's either stuff like that, or it's like a white projection room for me, where it's like, you know, in a, like everything's just white, or everything's light, like there's everything structured from light, and if there's physical stuff in there, that's a hologram or a projection. I don't know, there's a few types I've been on, or you know, it's just made out of consciousness, like it's see-through, it's transparent, and it's created from us that are on board. So but the mushroom type scenario, I've seen similar, and some people even say like a mother of pearl shell effect. But the mushroom thing is brought up a lot.
Well, you know, it led me to really look at what the structure of a mushroom actually was. The ones that don't contain all the psilocybin. But, you know, actually the top of them looks like what? You remove the stem, they look like a saucer. And there's nothing that says that type of fungus can't be grown in space.
Well, it somehow travels from space. Like, oh, not travels from space, but Terrence McKinnon was talking about that connection there.
The spores. And the spores are impervious to ultraviolet radiation, just like another creature called the tardigrade, which is also called the water bear. But when they go into a type of cryogenic suspension, where they're in the suspended animation, that they're impervious to cosmic radiation also. You know, this brings us into two different areas here too, man. I think we should kind of address. One is something I was kind of rapping to you about, and I brought it up on the last interview, I was in, the masseuse thing. Mm-hmm. Remember talking about that?
I remember lightly going into that.
You know, I heard Linda Moulton Howe talking about it twice. I kind of like her work. But she said that, and I'd heard her saying it before one other time, that she got contacted by a masseuse, okay, that said that she had a client come in and deactivate their cell phone and everything. And when this client comes in, she's thinking about gray aliens just out of nowhere. And the masseuse, I think, is probably not like that, you know. She said, anyway, she gets this client down. She's rubbing her, and as she's rubbing her, she starts seeing something that looks like a TV, the snow on a TV, mm-hmm. a snow, and all of a sudden she sees a holographic projection of a gray alien come out of this woman. And and start looking around.
Do you reckon that could be like what I was describing, how seeing the one gene have come out of the static that is everywhere, like as if it could have got dense?
Another reason, I was close to bringing it up then.
Yeah.
But you know, what's interesting, Peter, is she said then that the cell phone, which was deactivated on the counter, made some sort of a sound that we've both heard, a screeching dolphin type of sound, and this holographic gray went back into this woman. And the woman, the client, was totally unaware of it, all right? And so that means that the cell phone triggered this holographic possession to go back, all right? Now, after Linda Moulton Howe announced that on Coast to Coast AM, 3 days later, 4 days, I heard her doing another interview. She said, days after I just announced that, I've gotten contacted by hundreds of masseuses saying they've seen something like that.
Why would it be masseuses that are saying this? This is weird.
You know what I think it is? I think when they're on the table and they're actually pressing and massaging around the basal of the neck, where a lot of these connections are, I think it jars something loose.
I think Sol was telling me somewhere in the back of the neck he's called the gate to consciousness point, or on the back of the neck, I think it's called, or the somewhere here.
Yeah, there's energy back there, and I think that's probably what it is. It's just launching that. But I also take that in the terms of what I've heard several experiencers say also. One of them being Black, so you know I definitely was paying attention.
Yeah.
But saying they had these beings come to their room, and sometimes there'd be a woman with them, and they'd have sex with the woman. Okay, and they go on this ship one time. They're on a ship on a table, and one of the mantis beings is there. Mantis is there, and this woman comes out that he had sex with before, and the mantis says, "You're comfortable with the presentation of this container, but what it's going to do is share consciousness with you." And then this woman turns into a ball of light, an orb, and enters him through the chest to share consciousness with him. And this ties into an individual who says, "I also have a copy of myself there that's inanimate unless they transfer me there."
Happened from that? Did he go into what happened from that, you know, going into the chest and sharing the consciousness with him? Like, was there any activations or anything happen?
That's as far as I got with it. That's all I heard. I mean, which, to be honest with me, was quite enough, man, because I'll be damned, they're going to be coming into my body and sharing that. That puts a whole other thing in the walk-in thing. I met a real walk-in, so I won't make any criticisms of that, all right? But, man, that's not cool. And honestly, if you want to think about, Peter, the amount of people that are carrying around these cell phones, kids that can't even put it down enough to go look at you in the face and respond, if that's invasion.
So what are you saying the function of the cell phone is with this then?
It's capable of producing some type of a scalar frequency,
mm-hmm,
that's probably aiding. And what this woman said, that the masseuse said, that when the cell phone made this odd sound, when it was deactivated, it's like it was like telling this being, "Hey, you're out of your cage, get back in." You know what I mean?
I've got one here and I could be carrying, like, seriously, it's seriously, when we look at it, like, when we're talking about it, because I'm taking this serious, and I've been a follower of Linda's work as well. And again, like, we'll talk it, I don't get to do much research anymore between doing the center and clients and all that. You know, I'll watch the odd show when I can, but so this is really informative. And I remember you saying something about this. So basically, the mobile phone, if it's producing that type of frequency, it could harbor and house. And if we look at how this is connected to the cell towers and everything else, it could create a network, a global network, along with the satellites, of a system for these things to be popping in and out and using these as a way to get to people that are, you know, pop up in the home or whatever. Though, obviously, cell phones haven't been around for forever, so there's, you know, but this is something else, maybe different type of gray we're talking about as well.
You know, I've been hearing also about this thing for a while now. It's called nanosatellites, and a nanosatellite grid, which are satellites that are like the size of, you know, your TV and more complex than any satellites you've ever had. They're all a network, a grid, and they're ran by a thing that's in orbit with them called Mother that coordinates their self-replicating, self-repairing machines okay, made by us, and it's kind of what Reagan used to call the Star Wars
defense system. Yeah, yep.
Yeah, and that's tied into that. You know, I'm taking that a step level. There's that gentleman. He's communicated with me a little bit on Facebook, Eric Raines, and I heard about him through Kelly Coffey. And Kelly Coffey's doing implant removals now, like this gentleman is. But when I heard him talking, Pete, he's the first person I'd heard that really was, bam, it felt like moo, and I knew what he was saying was real. But he was talking about several different types of implants, but even more to the point, certain implants that are put on us, dimensional implants, scalar implants that are put on us before we incarnate, as we incarnate here.
So on top of attachment.
Yeah, and then as we incarnate, they start physically becoming more physical as time goes on. That takes it even a whole nother level from just the regular physical implants we know about that Dr. Lear had pulled and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you know, and when we take that in terms of what we talked about before in soul traps, when we incarnate here, there's the scalar frequency that starts at the artificial rings of Saturn, goes over to Mars, and then over to the dark side of the moon, and a certain monolithic structures here. And we incarnate through the dark side of the moon to the soul catcher. We go through there, and it electrifies, shocks us, and it wipes our soul memories. And then the other part is what? We're immortal souls trying to forget who we are also. So it's easy, isn't it, to help us with our game?
Yeah.
Can you imagine if we keep – what I'm seeing now as far of awakening keeps going on, and more people like me are born that have past life memories and aren't scared to talk about it or let that be an influence in their life. Can you imagine what it'd be like if you have 20 Marcus Garveys or Nikola Teslas that are not being held back, creating free energy devices?
Yeah.
Where that would take our civilization, where we'd already be now, if that wouldn't be, you know, that's being held down to a minimum. Instead, the prison planet, the prison population that incarnates here like you and I from the levels of fluidity or wherever they're coming from, they can just run them up down here. In physical bodies like you and me.
So what, like with this said, what advice can you give to people for what we can do? Because we were talking about before, and I 100% agree that we're allowing this to happen by participating in and accepting this program of the illusion. Like we're all co-creating this by accepting this. And this is where even with a lot of the ancient texts, from my understanding, a lot of it's been manipulated. And because people are reading this, that's even being, you know, whether it's hardcore Christians or hardcore whatever, because a lot of the scripts have been changed. I believe in a lot of these ancient masters and saints and sages. I believe that they're actual beings, but I believe that the scripts have been changed. And what's happening is you've got these huge establishments created around it, which is adding to this in terms of projecting the illusion of what the book's foretelling and all this sort of stuff. And then, you know, we've got stuff going on now. They're trying to make it so... you don't get government benefits or your kids can't go to school if you aren't getting friggin' immunization. You know, all this crap's going on and everyone's accepting it. This is the problem. Everyone's accepting it. And this is where we all need to go. It's like me. I'm getting no help from government assistance, yet they'll say I couldn't even work more than 16 hours a day. I'm able to live now off 4 clients a week on average. And I'm stood up and I'm not putting up with their shit. And this is where I'm saying, I know that people are programmed going, I've got mortgage and I've got this and I've got that. Yeah, but this is more important. And if you can make a sustainable, get along living and get out of that system, we don't own anything we've got. We own our cars, we don't own our home, but we're making it so that's how we're doing it. We're not standing up to that. We're not eating their GMO crap. Everything we get is organic. Things are a bit more expensive and hard, but we're trying to do our part to go, look, we're not adding to your system. If anything, we're detracting from it. So what I'm saying is, what advice have you got on whatever level for people to take their power back and go, you know, I want to start running my life here rather than co-creating this bull crap with the rest of society, with the news and stuff like that, which is a really big hypnotizer in this illusion.
I think it starts by focusing, learning how to focus your intent of will and stop letting everything else interfere, because that's what everything's set up to do. But it's about actually learning how to train yourself to merge with the creator, all right, and how to kind of focus on that. And that is done through not listening to what other people did. It's through action. Try some of the techniques you've read about. Try some of the meditations. Practice them. Try to develop and see what works for you, what manifests tangible results here in the third dimension. You know what I mean? Some things you can read and people say, oh, that's crap. Like, you know, I can't think of somebody right now, but this crap and Castaneda, or he's one. Somebody said, oh, everything he said was crap. Okay, did you try any of his techniques? You practice any of them? Well, no. Well, I did, and a couple of them yielded really quick, tangible, third-dimensional manifestations. Why is that? And they just look at you. They can't explain it, man. So don't take other people's word for it. Learn how to protect yourself and use your action to learn how to focus your intent of will. When the creator made creation and us, he did that through intent of will. And most of us don't know how to do that. And when I say that, I've spoken before about the two types of awareness, all right? The two types of consciousness, if you were awareness, I prefer to call it. You've got your left side awareness and your right side awareness. On the right side is like the band of man, the third dimension here. Everything we need to keep this illusion going. What we're agreeing on is immortal souls to avoid that boredom, all right? That's on this side here. We got a pair of bills here, take care of our kids, financial stress constantly if you're a normal person, never ends. That's all on this, but that takes all of our energy to keep this illusion going to point of where people like me don't dream lucidly. I don't have a whole lot of dream attention. I have to practice and do things out of the normal to make sure I can gather enough surplus energy to start perceiving on the other side of awareness, the left side, which is where death lies, the superconscious, the sleep cycle, other beings, multidimensional existence. That's on the left side. But most of the time, we don't have enough freed energy to even perceive our dream, have dream attention. So that's kind of what I would say. Learn how to free up enough energy to work with the other side of awareness, the left side.
Open yourself up, and just like not in a bad way, but be open-minded, I guess, you know, and try things rather than, you know, ridiculing or not doing the work. And this is the thing, isn't it? People actually, you know, it's about doing the work, doing the hard yards and working on yourself, isn't it? And if it was easy, we wouldn't even be in the predicament we're in as a civilization here now, and either would some of the other civilizations too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, man, one thing for me, like there's two, and I mentioned this before, I probably sound repetitive, but it's important. There are two types of spiritual warriors, as I call it. You've got dreamers, and then you've got like gatherers, stalkers, whatever you want to call it, but they're two different, you know what I mean? And the thing about the dreamers are these people, when they're incarnating the bodies like us, they have these lucid dream ability, they have dream attention. They can focus on things in their dream, and they're almost living there like they're living here, close. That's dream attention. And then you've got people like me, the gatherers, the stalkers, that don't dream lucidly. You go to sleep, I go lay it down, shit, I'm out, man. You know what I mean? I get up sometimes, there'll be some dream attention, but it's very fleeting. You know what I mean? So I have to meditate and do things here, non-routine things, that frees up enough surplus energy that when I do go to sleep, then I start having dream attention. Then I start learning how to pass the gates of dreaming, which is hard. But most people, man, you try that one time, like the very first gate is to look at your hands while you're dreaming. Right now in your waking state, remember to look at your hands. I'm gonna look at my hands tonight when I'm asleep. And will you be able to do it? Most people, no. I tried 5-6 times, I couldn't do it. So immediately what? You want to quit. It didn't work. I don't want to practice it anymore. I tried that stuff. It's weird. I don't want anybody to know I'm doing it. It didn't work, so I'm going to quit. That right there, the same reason many people go along with Christianity. That's a good one because they say, I'm going to go with this because if, just in case, if they're right, I'm going to have a demon poking me in the ass with a pitchfork while I shuffle sulfur into a lake for eternity, all right? And I'm going to go along with all what the Christians say and this one book just in case, because just in case they're right. You know, that just in case is the most powerful hypnotic suggestion.
I call it the what if mentality. That's what it is, a what if mentality. And you can either live your life with the what if, or you can just give things a go. And how many billions of people are on the planet are following that what if mentality? It's almost like you live your life by the chances of whatever you're thinking about may happen aren't going to happen anyway. It's like thinking on the downside of everything. What if I do this and this happens? What if I do this and this happens? It's like, how are you going to evolve? You've got to get out of your comfort zone to evolve. And that's what holds humanity back, is the fear of the unknown. It's like, yes. Who cares? You know, give it a go. Are you going to die? You know, unless it's serious shit, like if, you know, I'm thinking about jumping off a cliff to see if I can fly, you know, maybe not that's a good idea, but you know, you got to give things a go, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, and it's a thing to learn to protect yourself. And that once again starts with the intent of will and knowing what you're dealing with. And, you know, I can only speak for myself. I'm guilty of this. All right. I spent, man, years, decades interrogating my own guides of who they were and what they wanted. And they told me repeatedly, but I ask anyway. You know what I mean? But man, and they would say things like when they first started saying the Christ consciousness. I didn't like that at first. I said, oh, no, not that religious stuff. And they were like, they were immediately like telepathically telling me, no, this is beyond any person and any social religion thing you have. This is a frequency of love of the creator that you can access. Exactly. They talked about accessing it. Mm-hmm. That's what they were saying. So that is, you know, just one way to deal with it. But I rarely say that that's where my guides, I've all said they're a part of and from, and the love that preceded them, because it sounds so religious, I don't want to mention that.
Well, that's why, you know, it's been great you talking about the Plajaran side of things, because that's, they emphasize the Plajaran part of that, and I've had that experience as well, and that's the stuff that I've got past life, or actually future life stuff that I've got access to with there, but this is what you're talking about. Do you want to explain these guys? Because not the same as Shiji, but we're talking about the same higher dimensional stuff here. So go ahead, Barry.
Those are Plagiarian throne beings. Now, I couldn't remember them until I got regressed. I was interacting with other beings, and I couldn't remember them. But they, what was really unique about them, you mentioned the Wangina, and I've heard Mary Rodwell talking about them as well, but they have crystals, quasi-crystals, in the middle of their chests. All right, and it seemed like they're on these columns of light. That's why I kind of called them throne beings.
Yep.
But they said that they were Plagiarians, all right? And they had a lot of emphasis on the J. And when I said, well, Pleiadians, and they're like, no, Plagiarians were over this sector of space.
Yep.
And the one that stepped forward was named Bernadette, that was really communicating with me with the blue crystal inside. And their heads looked like they were like just 1,000 filaments of light going into space.
And those type are connected with the Elohim in Orion, Sirius, and the Pleiades as well, in that sector. There's that triangulation that they've got going on.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and it's sometimes we're not thinking things of in terms of consciousness. You just said something that somebody just asked me on Facebook, and I promise I'll answer everybody that sent me a message. He was saying, do you think that how much of us is us looking at us in the future? Our future self looking at us in the past? And I don't think it's even that separate when we're looking at it consciously. I've had to come accept that my first guide that was coming forward to me. And I, you know, as a kid, he would show up sometimes when I was playing alone and like build little dams with me to stop the water from running. And I thought he was a kid because he's playing with me. But I didn't realize, okay, no. This until one day he shows me to be, he's like insectoid-like. And I really realized this could even have been me coming back. And we don't know because we don't understand consciousness or what we are as immortal soul beings. Real quick.
Yeah.
The immortal soul being thing. You know, a contrast that I have, to get kind of geeky, is Star Trek once again. You know, an immortal soul being, a being of false illusions and guises. Now, you have a being on Star Trek named Q. And, you know, Q snaps his finger and creates basically a being that can take energy and matter to create space. I think that is us, and we can't remember it. You know, there was another one where the Captain Picard, the old man, they pull up to a planet that's been devastated by some big ship, but there's 1 acre of land on the planet with this old man and his wife in there. They're like dancing all the time. You remember that one?
Yeah.
At the very end, he says he destroyed the whole species that invaded there, not just one. He said he destroyed them all. And he said he was an immortal being from another galaxy called a Daud that lived in immortal, false surroundings and illusions. I think that is us. And I think that immortal souls, we get with each other's field, we can share that illusion. It's an agreement. You remember Phenomenon with Travolta? When he's got the, John Travolta, he's got the pen and he's using telekinesis to spin the pen. Yeah. Like, how are you doing that? He's going, it's an agreement. It's an agreement between me and the molecules. Same thing on a soul level. Yeah. It's an agreement between us and we can't remember it. We're too busy tricking ourselves right now.
That's food for thought.
Yeah, well, real quick and I'll shut up. The last, one of those Voyagers, they had another Q showed up, a weird one. They pulled him out of a comet and he started asking for asylum. And then the other Q we recognize shows up and says he's insane. He's trying to create suicide. And when they go to the continuum, like in this court proceeding, he shows them the continuum as this long road and a little gas station with about seven people standing out there. And he's like, man, we've been everything. And she's like, well, what is this with the road out here? He goes, oh, that's creation. It goes backwards, forwards. But we've been everywhere on the road. We've all been everything here. No one's talking here because there's nothing left to say. So that's why he wanted to end his creation, in his existence. And is that what you and I are dealing with as parts of the Creator?
This and is guys in the deep realms.
It's just food for thought.
This is where it gets deep. It's not, you know, this is where things can lead in terms of, you know, there's so many directions to take and it depends on how, you know, what direction and how deep you want to go into this because it keeps going.
Can I ask you a question, Peter? Yeah. How many times, like me and like others, you personally, how many times have you been told by these inorganic beings you don't remember what you are?
I can't remember how many times, like a lot of times. And that's what one of the first things Shiji ever said to me was exactly that. And then, yeah, I've found out some more stuff lately, which is, I'll break it here. I haven't even said it publicly yet. I haven't said this publicly, so this is going to be like, but Shiji's a facet of me.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
what I found out lately, and that's where it's funny because I'm doing all this work teaching other people that a lot of the beings they're interacting with are another facet of them, and that's been something that's been put on me lately too. So it's really I'm accessing another level of myself and at another vibration that exists in another space and time somewhere on a star.
Peter, now, well, you did your regression. Was that CG talking through you?
No, that was the Elohim and a mixture of Shiji. Like, it was, but it wasn't just... It's a mixture of beings. So sometimes there'll be groups of the beings there, different groups, different races that I'm interacting with or that I'm working with on a soul agreement, which it goes back to mainly there's a huge connection with the Elohim because from them, I've got remembrance of agreeing on doing what I'm doing here with the facet of myself, and that's sort of the core. It's almost like your football team. You got all these different dudes, and what's weird is it's the same voice, and it was the Orion speaking through me in the first one, but with the other ones, it's almost beings taking turns and jumping in and out. So it is a mixture, but mainly in the first one, it was the Orions. Which a facet of me is this? It's a facet of the Elohim, but it's a different evolved because the Elohim have created beings like Shiji and others in Orion and Sirius that occupy that space and time along with the throne type beings, and there's different variations. And I believe it's on their evolution. So Shiji's more of a crystalline white with a tinge of blue. The Elohim in Orion and other like the full blown ones. They're really, really blue, but the facet I come from in Orion is like a rainbow shimmer, and then the ones in Sirius are more blue as well, and I believe it's depending on their development in terms of evolution, though, because these offshoots are created by, like, other Elohims are created by the Elohim, and they're all like these creator light beings that are connected to other, like, basically Anunnaki or other facets of these. And then it goes back to Lyra, which that is, anyway, the Anunnaki connected to that. And then, you know, all this stuff goes on in Orion, and then we've got the human race here, and then the Pleiadians in the future. Though all this shit's going on at the same time. So this is just an insight to the sort of stuff that me and Barry have got going on in our realms.
You know, that's actually how we, a lot of people have asked me, kind of, how do you and Peter meet each other? I said, well, you know, I got so stressed out on my third regression. Not stressed out, blown away, because it wasn't bad, but just the fact that, you know, these beings started answering the hypnotist through me. And I'm sorry, I don't give permission for that real easy. You got to really be on a level of love with the creator and Christ consciousness for me to communicate with you if you're inorganic. You know, but they were answering the hypnotist through me and saying shit I didn't know. You know what I mean? So it's like, when we first met, I got online, I was looking up regressions. I put in something weird like alien regression or something. And your thing came up, you just put it up. And one of the things you commented on there, the other beings started commenting through me and coming through. And I was very uncomfortable with that or something like that you said. And I sent you a message on Twitter, man. And we started tweeting each other. But nonetheless, it's hard to accept that, you know, that part of fear is somewhat healthy in terms of there's certain things, there's self-preservation, but there's fear also, you know. But for you and I think you're like me, man, I always keep myself protected. I'm not sticking my neck out there, not sticking my hand in a bear trap and letting it come down. No way. You know what I mean? So at least try to protect yourselves. And that's what I advise most people. Don't be afraid of your consciousness. Exercise the techniques, try them, but protect yourself before you do any of it.
That's what I'll always stress. Do the clearings.
Learn to allow you to project your will to protect.
Yeah.
That's all.
Look, we'll wrap it up in a minute, but what type of information or downloads or information have you been coming across lately? Like, what have you been getting?
Man, honestly, a lot about the self-activating software has been coming through, and things like terraforming, and maybe that some of those sounds we're hearing is not just the interdimensional war, but it's terraforming that's been going on here thousands of years, and we're not seeing it, what we kind of talked about there. And a lot of the things about us being immortal souls and really what that means. And I appreciate that, because I'll be honest, man, I got smashed with the negative stuff for a while. And not my guides weren't forcing on me. I wasn't living it. But they're saying, hey, this is real, and you got to remember that too.
And be aware of it,
And it's just a way to stay prepared. So that came through. But then the other part is, okay, now the good part, remember who you are. Just like when we kind of come out of, I think when you wake up from a real deep dream, you're kind of froggy for just a minute, and then you kind of go on with your day. I think when we die, it's the same way. You're groggy for just a second, and it's a second before your own angels can get to you. And that's when the others come with the false light and try to bullshit you. You know what I mean? Tell you, shock you, and then send you back here saying you have a mission. So that's like things like that is coming through, that as immortal souls, we can intend ourselves beyond that by far.
What an experience, eh?
I tell you, I don't need to die again, though, to figure that out, man.
I'll be telling everyone up there, you go and do that now. Go and give that a go. Talk about self-mastery, God. Look, we'll wrap it up there, mate, but thank you so much. It's been awesome to have you back on.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure and always learning, and it's good just corroborating and, you know, all that sort of that stuff, you know, what we're both experiencing, because it, you know, seems to confirm a lot of things on a lot of different levels. And, I'm sure this is going to help many other people too, Barry. So thanks a lot for coming on, mate.
I want to say thank you, and thank to everybody for even listening to anything I say. Thank you.
Cheers.